All right, welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're going to be doing, well, you sent this in. It's some lecture notes by Dr. Gary Metters, and it looks like a really interesting deep dive into the structure of Paul's letter to the
Or maybe not therapy,
Corinthians. To Corinthians, yeah. So 1 Corinthians, and we're not going to be looking at like specific verses today, but we're going to be looking at the overall structure of the book, which is something that you had mentioned you're interested in. And you know, it's just as important, I think, as looking at
Absolutely.
you know, individual versus sometimes even more important.
I think it's like when you're trying to understand a building,
Right.
you want to know the architect's plan and the overall structure before you start looking at the individual rooms
Our
and how they fit
structures.
together.
Yeah, this is like getting a feel for the blueprint before we really, you know, start digging into the nuts and bolts of
That's a great way to put it.
certain passages and stuff. And you know, and we should say too, this is kind of a continuation of an introduction to 1 Corinthians. So
Yes, that's
it's
not a.
really laying the groundwork, I think, for a deeper
Yeah.
understanding of the text itself.
Yeah, it's foundational. And I think that's exactly what you were looking for, is you wanted to gain knowledge quickly but thoroughly, and understanding the structure is really key to that.
It's like a
It
shortcut
is.
to really getting these insights and not feeling overwhelmed, I think.
Yeah, and I think sometimes people do feel overwhelmed when they just dive into a book like 1 Corinthians, because there's so many different topics that Paul addresses, and it can feel a little bit like a jumble. But when you see how it all fits together in this logical structure, then it really starts to make sense.
And I think that's one of the things that Dr. Metters points out in these notes is that 1 Corinthians is not just a jumble of thoughts. It's actually structured in a very,
Intentionally, yeah.
deliberate way.
And he points out that there are actually two kind of distinct literary patterns that Paul uses to structure his letter. And that in and of itself is kind of interesting and unique, because most of the other letters that we have in the New Testament don't really follow this kind of structure. So it seems that Paul was being very deliberate and organized in his approach to addressing the various issues in the Corinthian church. And this is so fundamental that even commentaries on 1 Corinthians often follow these structural lines. So it's not just some, thing that scholars have come up with. It's actually something that's inherent in the text itself.
So let's get into these two patterns then. The first one that he talks about seems pretty straightforward. He says that there are three kind of key statements that act like big signposts in the letter. And the first one appears in chapter 1, verse 11. So what does that verse say, and why is that such a key marker?
Well, that verse says, "My brothers and sisters." And by the way, Dr. Metters points out that the 2011 NIV update has changed that from brethren to brothers and sisters to be a little bit more inclusive.
Oh, interesting.
And I think that's a good move. But anyway, it says, "My brothers and sisters, some of whom are from Chloe's household, have informed me that there are quarrels among you." So this is not just a casual remark. This is actually the starting point for the first major section of the letter, which runs from chapter 1, verse 10, all the way through chapter 4. So that's a big chunk of the letter. And in this unit, Paul directly tackles the problem of divisions and disagreements within the Corinthian church. And it all stems from this initial report.
It's like the news bulletin at the top of the hour that kind of kicks off this whole discussion.
It's like Paul saying, "Okay, I've gotten this report. Now let's talk about this." And it's interesting to me that the first two sections are prompted by reports that Paul has heard. And this suggests to me that he's reacting to immediate crises, whereas the third and much longer section, which we'll get to in a minute, demonstrates a more thoughtful, collaborative approach as he engages with their specific concerns. So it's almost as if the church is growing in its awareness of its issues and its desire for guidance.
Interesting.
So there's a progression there.
All right, so that's the first signpost. What's the second statement that tells us that Paul is moving on to a new area?
The second statement comes in chapter 5, verse 1, and it says, "It is actually reported that there is sexual immorality among you, and of a kind that even pagans do not tolerate." That's a really strong statement. And it clearly signals the beginning of the second major section which covers chapters 5 and 6.
Okay, so we go from these internal disagreements to pretty serious...
Yeah, some serious ethical problems.
Ethical problems, yeah. And he even says that the pagans don't do this stuff.
That's right.
So that's really saying something.
Yeah, and Dr. Metters points out that these chapters deal with both sexual immorality and also legal issues, like believers taking each other to court. Mm. And I think there's a connection there.
What do you think the connection is?
I think the connection is this desire for status within the Corinthian community.
Okay.
So in the case of the sexual immorality,
right,
it might be that they're pursuing
right
their own individual gratification or their own sense of freedom.
Okay.
Even at the expense of the community.
Right.
And in the case of the lawsuits,
right,
it's this desire to win.
To win, yeah.
To be right.
Yeah.
To have that external validation.
Yeah.
And so I think both of these issues stem from this underlying problem of status.
Okay. So it's all about like kind of ego and and power and place within the community. Yeah.
A lack of humility, I guess you could say.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny because it seems like every church I've ever been a part of has struggled with that in some way or another.
Oh, I think that's true of every human community.
Right.
We all struggle with pride and ego and the desire to be on top.
Right.
And so it's not surprising that the Corinthians were struggling with this as well.
And notice, too, how chapter 4 kind of wraps up his thoughts on the quarrels.
Yes.
And then chapter 5, boom, we're hit with this next reported issue.
Exactly. It's a clear change of focus.
Yeah. Very clear shift.
Yep.
All right. So the first two sections are prompted by these reports.
Right.
That Paul has heard. The third statement seems to indicate a different kind of input altogether.
That's right. The third key statement is in chapter 7, verse 1, and it says, "Now for the matters you wrote about."
Okay.
And this is a really significant turning point because it tells us that Paul is now directly responding to questions and concerns that the Corinthians themselves had put in writing and sent to him.
So it's not just stuff he's heard through the grapevine.
Exactly.
This is like...
They've written him a letter. And they've said, "Hey, Paul, we need your input on these things."
Wow. And that is the longest section of the letter, isn't it?
It is. It goes all the way to the end of the main body of the letter, up to chapter 16, verse 4.
Wow.
So chapters 7 through 16, verse 4, cover a wide array of topics, all originating from the Corinthian-specific inquiries.
So he's really like engaging in a dialogue with them here.
That's right. It's not just him issuing commands or pronouncements. Great. He's actually listening to their questions.
Yeah.
And trying to provide them with guidance.
Okay. So these three statements, chapter 1, verse 11, chapter 5, verse 1, and chapter 7, verse 1.
Right.
These are the main structural pillars that help us to understand the overall flow.
Yeah. Think of them as the major headings in an outline.
Gotcha. Okay.
Or the main points in a presentation.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
All right, so we've identified these three clear shifts based on how Paul is receiving information.
Right.
Now, the second literary pattern that you talked about was this peri de phrase.
Yes.
So can you explain what that is and why it's important for understanding the structure?
Certainly. So peri de is a little Greek phrase that means now concerning.
Okay. Okay.
And Paul uses it quite frequently in his letters.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically a way of introducing a new topic or a new subject.
Okay.
So it's like he's saying, okay, we've talked about this, now let's talk about this.
Okay.
And you'll see this phrase in older translations, like the American Standard Version from 1901. They'll often translate it as "now concerning."
Okay.
But newer translations tend to just kind of smooth it out.
Right.
And not make it as explicit.
Gotcha. Okay. So it's like a series of mini introductions.
Exactly.
Within that larger section where he's responding to their letter.
That's right. And it shows how organized Paul was.
Right.
Even within that larger section.
Right.
He's breaking it down into these smaller units.
Okay. Can you give us some examples of where this phrase appears and the topics that it introduces?
Sure. So if you look at chapter 7, verse 1, it says, "Now concerning the things which you wrote to me."
Okay.
So right there, he's introducing the whole section
on
marriage and sexuality.
Right.
Then in chapter 7, verse 25, he says, "Now concerning virgins."
Mm-hmm.
Right. So he's narrowing the focus down to a specific issue within that larger topic.
Okay.
Then in chapter 8, verse 1, he says, "Now concerning things sacrificed to idols."
Okay.
So now we're moving on to a whole new topic and so on.
Okay.
And he continues to use this phrase throughout the letter.
So he's really going through their list of questions one by one.
It seems that way.
And it's really interesting how he uses this phrase to mark these shifts.
Yeah, it's a really helpful tool for understanding the flow of the letter.
And it's interesting that he points out this case in chapter 16, verse 12.
Yes.
Where the American Standard Version translates it as, but as touching Apollos.
Right.
But the underlying Greek phrase, peridet, is the same.
Exactly.
So even that could be understood as now concerning Apollos.
Yes. And I think that's a more accurate translation.
Okay.
Because it fits with the pattern that we see elsewhere in the letter.
Okay. And he also mentions that this phrase appears in other letters by Paul.
Yes, it does. It appears in 1 Thessalonians, for example.
Okay.
So this wasn't just something that he did in 1 Corinthians.
Right.
It was a common way for him to structure his thoughts.
Interesting. Okay. So between these three major statements that tell us about Paul's sources.
Right.
And this recurring peri-death phrase that guides us through these responses to their questions.
Right.
We really get a sense of this very deliberate way that Paul constructed this letter.
Absolutely. It was not just a random outpouring of thoughts.
Right.
It was a carefully structured answer to specific situations.
Right.
And inquiries.
Yeah, it was a real dialogue.
It was dialogue, yeah.
A back and forth happening through this written correspondence.
Exactly. And this logical framework really makes 1 Corinthians stand out.
Okay.
In comparison to some other New Testament letters.
Okay, so now he also presents a kind of a more traditional Western style outline of 1 Corinthians. How does this outline connect with the two patterns that we've already been talking about?
Yeah, so this Western outline is basically a hierarchical view of the letter's structure.
Okay.
It takes everything that we've already talked about and kind of puts it into a more traditional outline format.
Right, like with Roman numerals and all that.
Exactly. Yeah, so it starts with the introductory remarks in chapter 1, verses 1 through 9, which is the standard salutation in a letter from that time period.
Okay.
Then it identifies Paul's response to the oral report from Chloe's household, which spans chapter 1, verse 10 through chapter 4.
Okay.
So that's directly linked.
To that first statement.
To that first key statement,
Okay.
Following that is Paul's response to certain oral reports or rumors in chapters 5 and 6, which covers the sexual immorality and the legal disputes.
Which is that second statement.
Exactly. Yeah. And the longest section is Paul's response to the written communique.
Right, from Corinth.
From Corinth, which runs from chapter 7 to chapter 16, verse 4.
Okay.
And that's further divided
according
to the period of sections.
Okay.
So we have marriage and sexuality in chapter 7.
Okay.
Meat offered to idols in chapters 8 through 10.
Okay.
Church order in chapter 11.
Uh-huh.
Spiritual gifts in chapters 12 through 14.
Okay.
The resurrection in chapter 15.
Right.
And the collection for the Jerusalem church.
Okay.
In chapter 16, verses 1 through 4.
Okay.
And then the outline concludes with the closing remarks of the epistle.
Okay.
In chapter 16, verses 5 through 24.
Wow. It's pretty amazing how neatly it all fits together.
It is.
It really does show how organized Paul's thinking was.
Paul was a very logical thinker.
Yeah. But he does mention, too, that understanding chapters 1 through 4 as a unified response to Chloe's household can feel a little less straightforward sometimes.
Yeah, that's true.
So why might that be?
Well, I think it's because while chapter 1, verse 11, clearly introduces the overarching issue of quarrels within those subsequent chapters, Paul addresses several interconnected but distinct aspects of that problem.
Right.
So he talks about divisions based on loyalty to different leaders.
Okay.
He talks about the nature of true spiritual wisdom versus worldly wisdom.
Huh?
He talks about the role and conduct of church leaders.
Okay.
So while the initial report from Chloe's household sets the general theme of disunity, Paul delves into various related issues that might not immediately feel like one continuous unbroken response.
It's like he's riffing a little bit.
Yeah, it's like he's saying, okay, this is the main problem.
Right.
But there are all these other things that are connected to it that we need to talk about as well.
Okay, so it's like that initial report was like a catalyst for this much broader discussion.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right.
All right. And then towards the end of his notes here, he recommends some commentaries for further study, and he specifically mentions this guy, David Garland.
Yes, David Garland.
So what makes Garland's work particularly helpful for getting this big picture view of 1 Corinthians?
Well, Dr. Metters highlights Garland's commentary because it's part of the bigger exegetical commentary series.
Okay.
And this series is known for its in-depth
scholarly
analysis.
Right.
But Garland's commentary in particular is also known for its engaging narrative style.
Okay.
And the excellent summaries that he provides at the beginning of each section. Yeah. So he really helps you to see the big picture before right. he dives into the details.
So he's kind of like synthesizing each unit, right. showing how the parts connect to the larger argument.
That's right.
Okay, so if you're listening to this and you're like, man, I really want to dig even deeper into this, Garland sounds like a really good place to start.
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. All right, well, this has been really insightful. I think we've covered a lot of ground here.
Yeah.
And you listening at home now have a much clearer understanding, I think, of the overall structure of 1 Corinthians.
Yeah, you should be able to see how those key statements
right.
reveal Paul's sources of information right. and how the peri de phrase
yeah.
guides us through his responses to their written questions.
It really is like a roadmap for understanding this letter. Yeah. And I think what's really cool about all of this is that it really shows this very dynamic yeah. relationship between Paul and the Corinthian church.
Yeah, it's not just a one-way communication.
Right.
It's a real dialogue.
He's listening to them.
He's listening to them. He's responding to them.
He's trying to address their specific needs.
And hopefully you, as the listener, you recognize this structure and it enhances your own personal reading of 1 Corinthians.
I hope so.
You know, so that you can approach each section with a better sense of its context and its purpose.
Yeah. And I think that will really help you to avoid feeling overwhelmed
right.
by the details.
Right.
And it'll lead to those aha moments where you yeah. see how everything fits together.
Absolutely. All right. Well, before we go, I do have a kind of a final question for you, the listener out there.
Okay.
As you're going through and studying 1 Corinthians, consider how understanding these different channels of communication, you know, the oral reports versus the written inquiries.
Yeah.
How might that influence how we interpret Paul's tone?
That's a good question.
And the specific nature of his answers in different parts of the letter.
Yeah, because sometimes his tone is very sharp and other times it's very gentle.
Right.
So could that be related to the way in which he's receiving the information?
That's something to think about.
Yeah. And what does that tell us about the challenges of communication and leadership within a church community?
Yeah, especially in those early days of Christianity when everything was so new and they were trying to figure out how to apply the gospel
to these brand new situations.
To these new situations.
Yeah, that they were encountering. Yeah. All right. Well, that's a great note to end on. Thanks so much for being here.
It's been a pleasure.
And we'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.
See you later.